Today, I'm going to tell you about Mike, a Lake Tahoe park ranger who is patrolling the park when something in the lake, big and mysterious, catches his eye and shakes up everything he believes. Imagine sitting by a calm lake when suddenly the water stirs and you see something that you can't explain. Well, I'm going to tell you about it, and it might just shake you to your core. We're going to journey into a world where the unbelievable becomes believable, right in the middle of one of our state parks. Mike took his job as a park ranger at Lake Tahoe, Nevada State Park, very seriously. It was about preserving nature, educating visitors, and sometimes rescuing an overambitious hiker who thought they could take on the wilderness without proper gear or experience. The work was good, honest, and it kept him grounded. Mike liked the predictable patterns of the seasons and the clear, crisp Tahoe air that never failed to fill his lungs with a sense of purpose. It was a crisp morning when the first strange disturbance caught his attention. Mike was out on patrol in one of the park's motorboats, the water around him calm. It was a tranquility he had come to expect on the lake, which is why the sudden ripple that disturbed its surface felt so jarring. It was subtle. Just a slight disruption in the water's rhythm, and he might have dismissed it as a fish jumping for an early meal, if not for the size and the odd circular pattern it made. Curiosity piqued, Mike cut the boat's engine, letting the craft drift as he watched the water settle back into its familiar stillness. He scanned the surface, searching for any sign of fish or maybe debris that could have caused the ripple. Finding nothing, he shrugged it off as an anomaly. Perhaps a thermal updraft from the lake bed, though he had never seen anything quite like it before. Days passed, and the incident faded into the back of his mind as he stayed busy with his job. It wasn't until the second occurrence that he started to take it more seriously. He was on the shore this time, discussing trail preservation with a group of volunteers when the water stirred again, more violently than before. Everyone saw it, a frothy upheaval, like something massive had turned just below the surface, before the lake returned to its peaceful state. Whispers started among the group, fingers pointing, voices tinged with excitement and a touch of fear. Mike tried to calm them, suggesting logical explanations. A sturgeon, perhaps. Not impossible, although it would be surprising. But even as he spoke, Mike couldn't shake the feeling that what they had seen didn't fit the behavior of any fish he knew. Then came the night that changed everything. Mike was out late, following up on reports of campfires left unattended. That's when he heard it. A sound unlike any he heard before. A low, resonant rumble that seemed to rise from the very depths of the earth. It was a sound that felt ancient somehow. He stood at the water's edge, the moonlight shining across the surface, and for the first time, he saw it.
Not just a disturbance, but a form, a serpentine shape gliding through the water with a grace that was shocking. It was easily longer than any boat on the lake, with scales that shimmered under the moonlight in hues of deep emerald and midnight blue. Its movements were fluid as it moved along slowly and purposefully. Its eyes were these large, almost translucent orbs that reflected the moonlight, speckled with star-like flecks of gold. Its body was muscular, a testament to its strength, and along its back ran a dorsal fin, not unlike those of the sturgeons he had seen online, but on a scale that was much, much larger. Mike noticed that with each movement, the creature's scales would catch the light in different ways, sometimes appearing almost translucent.
As it swam closer to the edge of the lake where Mike was watching, he could see the intricate patterns on its skin, like the rings of a tree. The creature's tail was powerful, and he watched it as it moved the creature through the water perfectly. The tail fin fanned out in a way that was so unique that Mike was mesmerized just looking at it. He stared at it with his breath caught in his throat, and as the creature dove, its body arching in a graceful bow before disappearing into the lake.
Mike found himself trying to categorize it, explain it away. But there was a part of him that could not return to the comfort of ignorance. He pondered over coffee the next morning, staring out across the water that was his responsibility trying to make sense of it. The encounters grew more personal as time went on. Mike would be out on the lake, and he would feel a presence observing him, even if he didn't see anything. He began taking notes, documenting everything. The patterns of the disturbances, the times, the weather conditions. He noted the way the wildlife seemed to react. The birds that would suddenly take flight. The fish that seemed to boil at the surface as if escaping something from below.
And then suddenly, as they had begun, the disturbances stopped. The lake returned to its normal serenity, and Mike never had another glimpse of the creature, despite trying many times. The life at the park returned to normal, but he now approached his job with a more of an open mind. He remained a park ranger, but he also now felt as if he was a guardian of a secret. And although he never spoke of the serpent-like being to anyone, he believed in it wholly and hinted at it during his talks. This is the first time he's ever revealed the details of what he saw that one night. And for that, I thank him. So there's this woman, Jenna. She's really into conservation, like really into it. You know, one of those park rangers who'd rather spend time with trees than with people. So she's out there in the Redwood National and State Parks, which is a string of protected forests and beaches and grasslands along the Northern California's coast. And she's just out there doing her thing, trying to keep ancient groves safe and all that. Jenna's got this routine. She checks on wildlife, the trails, the usual stuff, every single day.
Now Jenna, she's seen her fair share of odd things in the woods. You spend enough time out there, you're bound to. But there is one day that things started to stand out to her and look different. Animals, you see, they have this rhythm to them, like they're all dancing to something we aren't a part of. But suddenly, on that one day, it's like they all changed. Squirrels are darting about like mad. Birds are dead silent when they should be making a racket. And the deer, let's just say they looked like they saw a ghost. And Jenna, she's starting to feel it too. It's like when you know someone's staring at you, but when you turn around, there's no one there. She's getting that feeling all the time, especially in this one part of the forest. So, she starts thinking, is it poachers? Is it some weird disease? She's got to figure it out because it's her job. But more than that, it's what she's here for personally, too. So, she's out there, more than usual, turning over every leaf, checking every tree. Then one evening, right as the mist is coming in, making the whole place look like something out of a fairy tale, she sees it, or rather, she doesn't see it. Things are moving, branches bending, leaves rustling, but there's nothing there, no wind, no animals that she can see, nothing that would explain it. And it's not random, it's like something's moving with purpose, with intelligence. It's almost playing with her, like it knows she can't see it. Jenna's got this feeling that it's some kind of spirit or protector, something ancient, as old as the Redwoods maybe. It's not threatening, but it's powerful. She said you can feel it in your bones. That's what Jenna would tell you if you ever got her to open up about the whole thing. It's not like the movies where you have this dramatic showdown or something. No, this is real life. And real life doesn't play out like a three-act play. Jenna kept feeling that presence, like a silent giant standing just over her shoulder. Sometimes, she'd be walking a trail she's walked 100 times, and suddenly, the air would shift, the temperature would drop a few degrees, and she'd know it was there. She couldn't explain it. She had no photos, no footprints, nothing. But every hair standing up on the back of her neck told her it was real. And also, things would happen. A fallen branch blocking a path she was sure was clear the day before, or a perfectly woven spider's web in a shape she'd never seen, appearing overnight, and the animals, they acted like they knew it too, like they respected it, gave it space. Jenna watched as a fox would pause and tilt its head, listening to something she couldn't hear, then take a different path, avoiding an area where the air felt charged. She'd lean against the rough bark of an ancient redwood, close her eyes and feel a kind of heartbeat, slow and deep, thrumming through the ground. One day, Jenna came across a clear cut, a patch of land nearby, where illegal loggers had done their work. It was like walking from a dream into a nightmare. The contrast shook her, standing on the edge, looking out at the stumps and sawdust. It was like a silence screaming in her ears, That's when she realized the spirit wasn't just some random being wandering the woods. It was a protector of life that thrived there. She started seeing the signs then, understanding them. A young tree, somehow bending and twisting around obstacles as it grew, reaching for sunlight in a perfect arc. It was as if it was being guided. Mushrooms in a pattern, a message in their placement. It was the forest speaking, the spirit talking in a language without words. Jenna dedicated more of her time, her life, to safeguarding these groves. She became an advocate, speaking at town halls, writing articles, always careful to leave the spirit out of it. She couldn't prove it, and she knew she'd lose credibility if she tried to speak of it. But she'd take people into the forest, show them its beauty, its majesty, let them feel the peace, the power, and some of them, they'd feel something more, something they couldn't put their finger on. They'd leave knowing, without knowing how they knew, that this place was alive in a way that wasn't just about biology and ecology. As for Jenna, she never stopped feeling the presence of the forest. She worked alongside it. Of course, the spirit never showed itself, never made its form known, and Jenna never needed it to. It was enough to know it was there. And every night, Jenna knew she wasn't alone. The forest was alive, watching, and she was a part of it, as much as any tree, any creature that called it home. So, maybe this isn't your usual type of unknown creature story, but it's a story of the unknown nonetheless. The unknown that really exists. And hopefully it will help people to believe just a little bit more in what they don't know.
All right, so here's the thing. I've got this story to tell you about Tom. He's not your typical park ranger, or at least he didn't start out that way. He started off in the trenches, digging up old pots and arrowheads, trying to piece together stories from 1,000 years ago. That's right, he was an archaeologist by trade, before he got his badge and started working in the parks.
So, Tom's out there in Mesa Verde National Park, right? Big place, lots of cliffs, and these ancient houses stuck into the sides like barnacles on a ship's hull. He's seen some really strange things out there before, or so he thought. This one time, he's out on the back trails that tourists don't usually take, and he sees this weird marking on the ground. It's not natural, not a bear, not a mountain lion. It's a marking that he's never seen before, and he remembers it. He starts asking around, you know, real casual-like. Doesn't want to seem like he's lost his marbles. The old-timers and the local Native American guides, they don't want to say much. But he catches wind of something, some whispers of a creature straight out of the legends, something that's supposed to live out there in those parts of the park. So Tom, being Tom, can't let it go. He starts trying to find a connection. He's got this hunch, see, that whatever's out there is not just a story. But then, this one night, something's different. It's like the air's charged with electricity, and he feels the hairs on his neck stand up. He's not alone. He can feel eyes on him, but every time he spins around, there's nothing there. Just the moon, the stars, and the wind. But then, just as he's about to call it a night, he hears it. A sound that's like a growl, but not quite. More like stones grinding together, if that makes any sense. He's got his flashlight out, and he's swinging it around like he's conducting an orchestra. And that's when he sees it. This creature. It's so strange and different than what he's used to encountering. It's got the fur of a bear but stands upright. Its eyes are deep, like it knows something about the world that Tom's never even dreamed of. Tom's scared, sure, but he's also fascinated. This thing, it's majestic, and it's clear it's not there to harm him. He doesn't know how he knows, but Tom is sure that he is safe. And he thinks that this creature has been there in the park all along, watching over the place, making sure the sacred sites are respected. Days turn into weeks, and Tom's out there every night, trying to catch another glimpse, to understand this link to the past. He's got notes scattered all over his cabin, maps with sightings, scraps of legends that seem to match up with what he's seeing. One night, he follows this hunch to a part of the park that's rarely visited. It's a clear night, and the moon is so bright it's like daylight. And there it is, the creature, standing by an old kiva, a sort of ceremonial pit the Puebloans used. It's like the creature's performing some sort of ritual, paying homage to the ancestors. It stands upright, its silhouette etched against the dusky sky. The setting sun casts an orange glow that outlines its form. It's large, easily over 6 feet, with broad shoulders that taper to a slender waist. The skin on its face looks rough, textured like the bark of an ancient cottonwood tree, and it shimmers with a subtle iridescence when the creature moves. There's something undeniably majestic, yet unnervingly foreign and unknown about it. Its eyes, large and reflective, seem to absorb the light around them, glowing with a soft glow like a low wattage light bulb. The hands are what catches attention next. They are human-like, but with elongated fingers that end in what appear to be delicate, curved claws. The creature moves slowly and deliberately, making itself big and then crouching down and touching the ground. It did this repeatedly for almost 10 minutes, and then it turned its head slowly, almost as if it were looking for something. Tom, he keeps his distance, not wanting to intrude. He watches as the creature then places something at the edge of the kiva, then disappears into the night. When it's gone, Tom goes to look. It's an artifact, old, very old, but unmistakably from the Puebloan people. From that night on, Tom's convinced. This creature, it's not just a story. It's the past and the present coming together. It's the guardian of Mesa Verde, a living link to the people who once called this place home. He doesn't have all the answers, but he knows something extraordinary is sharing the park with him. Tom keeps it to himself mostly. Who would believe him anyway? But he's got this new respect for the park, for the history it holds. Every time he puts on that ranger hat, he feels like he's part of something bigger, something ancient and wild. So there you have it. That's the story of Tom and the Guardian of Mesa Verde. Make of it what you will, but I'll tell you this. Next time you're out in those ancient landscapes, pay attention. You never know what's watching from the shadows.
Liz had been a ranger in Denali for the better part of a decade. She knew every twist in the trails, every hidden valley where the caribou liked to bed down, and she could tell you which ridge to climb if you wanted to be left utterly speechless by the Aurora Borealis. But this wasn't just another day at the park for her. This was a day that she'd stumble upon something that didn't fit into her comprehensive understanding of the Alaskan wilderness. Something utterly shocking.
It started with the snow. Now, snow in Denali isn't exactly headline news, but this was different. Patterns in the snow, if you could call them that, had shifted in a way she couldn't quite put her finger on. They weren't the usual indentations left by wildlife. These were more deliberate, almost strategic. She'd seen plenty of tracks in her time, moose, lynx, even the occasional wolf. But these were none of those. Curiosity got the better of her, and she decided to follow the anomaly. She moved with the kind of quiet only years of trekking through snow can teach you, her snowshoes whispering against the icy crust. Hours passed. The sun began its slow dip toward the horizon, casting long shadows between the spruces and over the frozen ground. And then she saw it. The creature was hunched over a partially frozen stream, its form obscured by the falling snow and the encroaching twilight. It was large, larger than any bear Liz had encountered, with a thick, silvery coat that was so white that it seemed to blend into the winter landscape. Its back was to her, broad shoulders rising and falling with each breath it took, making her think it was exhausted from something. Had it been chasing prey, Liz found herself holding her breath, the cold air biting at her lungs. She watched, fascinated and frozen in equal measure, as the creature lifted its head. Its profile was sharp, almost regal, with a pronounced brow and a set of piercing eyes that scanned the horizon. It wasn't just the size or the strange, silvery fur that set the creature apart. It was the way it seemed so at home. She didn't dare reach for her camera, didn't dare to even shift her weight. The stories she'd heard came flooding back. The Yeti, they'd said, a creature of myth, adept in the art of surviving, of thriving, in the most inhospitable places on Earth. The suspense that hung in the air was palpable. Liz watched as the Yeti then knelt by the stream, its massive hands breaking through the thin layer of ice to reach the water beneath. The muscles under its fur shifted and flexed, a testament to the harsh life it must lead. It was then that the creature stopped, its head tilting slightly, as if it sensed her presence. Maybe it had smelled her. Liz's heart hammered in her chest, a rhythm that seemed deafening in the silence. But the Yeti didn't turn. Instead, it stood, towering and silent, and then it moved away from her, disappearing into the tree line. Liz remained there in awe. Had she, a rational and respected ranger, actually laid eyes on the fabled Yeti of the North? She kept starting at the spot where it was, to try and wrap her head around it and help herself believe it. The experience would stay with her. But for Liz, the encounter in the Alaskan wilderness wasn't about proving anything to anyone. It was a moment of pure, unadulterated wonder. A brief meeting of two creatures that she, and only she, got to experience. Liz would hike those trails again, of course, and more than once she'd pause at the spot where the snow patterns had first caught her eye. She would stop and look and listen, but nothing ever materialized. The wilderness would change with the seasons. Rivers would freeze and thaw. Trees would fall and new ones would take their place. But the memory of that day, of the creature she saw, would remain unchanged. Occasionally, she would notice that fresh anomalies would appear in the snow, a reminder that the Yeti, or whatever it was she had seen, was still out there, navigating the harsh climate with ease. And each time, Liz would feel that familiar pull of suspense, that stir of excitement. Maybe, she thought, some things were meant to stay hidden. Maybe the Yeti's elusiveness was a gift, a nod to the wildness that is still in charge in these parts of the world. A wildness that wasn't quite ready to be understood. And maybe, just maybe, that was okay. Because in a world where every mystery seemed solvable, where every question had an answer just a click away, the Yeti represented something pure, something untamed and untamable. It was a symbol of nature's enduring enigma, a testament to the wonders that still roamed, uncharted and free, in the fading wilds of our planet. And so, the story goes on, not with a conclusion, but with an invitation to wonder, to imagine, and to embrace the confusion and suspense that come when we stand at the edge of the known world and gaze into the wild, untamed heart of nature.
It happened a couple of years back on the job I was assigned to. I'm a plumber by trade. I've seen my fair share of unpleasant sights, but this, well, this was something else. I was working in a busy neighborhood, an old industrial district that turned into a hot residential spot. Plenty of fixer-uppers there. One early morning, on a trip for a routine job, I had the most otherworldly encounter.
Every morning, I wake up even before the birds start chirping and dawn breaks. I've always been an early riser. It was something about the tranquility of the morning air and the calm before everyone else starts their day. You see, plumbing isn't normally looked at as an exciting job, but it's always kept me on my toes. I enjoy it well enough. So back to that day, I had a job at a former warehouse that had been converted into swanky apartments. The job was simple enough: unblock a drainage pipe in the basement. I'd been there before, and I remember the place had a kind of eerie quiet about it. But that day, as I descended into the basement, the usual hum of the boilers and the distant rush of water seemed subdued, almost muted. My flashlight cast long, eerie shadows in the darkness, but I've been in enough dim basements to not let that bother me. Finding my way to the clogged pipe, my nostrils filled with a familiar smell, the damp, slightly rotten scent you'd expect when you're dealing with stagnant water. But there was something else. A lingering raw smell that I could not quite place. And then I heard it, a low consistent tap tap tapping echoing from deeper in the basement. I thought it might have been a water pipe banging against the wall or a faulty water heater, but it wasn't the typical clunking you'd expect. So I decided to go and check it out. The darkness seemed thicker as I moved further from the glow of my flashlight that was still at my workstation. Then, for just a split second, my flashlight beam illuminated something unusual in the dark. It was fast, so fast that I barely had a chance to even realize that there was something there at all. It wasn't a rat, too big for that, nor a human. It was pale, almost ghastly so, and was moving on all fours. I could not make out anything else before it skittered back into the darkness. My heart pounded in my chest and a sudden chill ran down my spine. The strange smell seemed to grow stronger now, making me feel a bit nauseous. As I tried to process what I had just seen and what I was supposed to do next, a low clicking sound filled the air, bouncing off the raw concrete walls. It was like twigs snapping or clattering rocks, but there was an erratic, almost organic rhythm to it. The sound was both curious and frightening, and with it came that strange smell again, raw, musty, and metallic. With a deep breath, I called out, trying to manage a firm tone. There was no response, just a short pause in the clicking, which then resumed. I was contemplating whether to head upstairs and call the building security when I saw it again. My light tracing along the rough concrete floors and wet walls picked up the figure swiftly moving again. This time, I had a better look. It was a nauseating sight, like something out of a horror movie. This thing was about 4, maybe 5 feet long, pale and gaunt, but with an unnerving agility. It had an almost deformed human-like appearance, but the limbs were all wrong. The hands and feet, contorted and elongated, seemed purposely designed for crawling instead of standing. The soft light caught its face in such a way that only emphasized the black pits that could only be eyes and a large gaping mouth, devoid of any teeth or tongue. For a split second, our eyes met. Those large, empty black eyes bore into me. It felt as if this creature, this crawly thing, was as confused and terrified of me as I was of it. It didn't expect to find me down there, just as I had not expected to find it. This wasn't just some mindless anomaly of nature. It felt like it had consciousness. I have to admit, fear got to me. I'd be lying if I said I didn't turn tail and bolt. I picked up my tools and got out of there as fast as I could, all the while hearing that clicking sound getting louder and more frantic. Security was called. They acted like they took me seriously, but the look in their eyes said it all. No one checked the basement as far as I know, not immediately at least. The job was still unfinished, but I didn't care. I never returned to that job site. I heard from a fellow plumber later that it was concluded to be a large rat infestation. This was easier for everyone's understanding, I guess. However, the episode left me rattled. For weeks after the encounter, I had nightmares about those large black eyes, the clicking noises echoing in my ears. To this day, I still wonder what it was doing there. Did it get lost? Did it live down there? What scares me more is the realization that there is so much unexplained in our daily lives. As ordinary as we like to keep things, one can't help but sense the extraordinary lurking just around the corner. I want to thank you for giving me a platform to share this story. People need to realize not all strange encounters can be so easily dismissed.
I need to tell you about something crazy that happened while my high school friends and I were working on a film project. I figured your channel might be interested in this, given the subject matter. Our short film was going to be a horror flick. We decided to shoot it in the Pine Barrens in New Jersey. I had been hiking there a few times in my youth, and it had this creepy atmosphere to it that I could remember. Of course, there were local legends of the place, but we were just looking for creepy woods to shoot our short film. We never thought we'd actually find anything unnatural out there.
It was the spring semester of my junior year. I was in a class that required us to direct and produce short movies for a section of our final exams. My crew and I decided to embrace the horror genre. We brainstormed different locations, but the Pine Barrens won out. I was the director. Brian and Mark handled the cameras, and Abby was in charge of the sound, using an old-school boom mic we found in the AV room at school. We spent the day scouting locations, filming scenes, and trying to get into the spirit of making a cool and edgy horror movie. Really, we were having a blast. we decided to play around with some of the local folklore in our stories. There were a few ghost stories surrounding the place, but the legend of the Jersey Devil seemed like an excellent fit for our amateur film. We ended up doing a bit of local research around town. We did some interviews and found that some people really did believe the stories. They thought the thing was real. I brushed it off, thinking they were just playing games with the dumb film kids hanging around town. But there was something in the way the people spoke about it that set me on edge. We had a couple of scenes to shoot in the dark, and we wanted to test out the cameras and the lighting, so we headed out back to the Barrens. Once it got dark, the woods felt different. There was a darker, more ominous air about the place. Now, I'm not a guy who scares easily, but out there in those silent woods, it was hard not to get a little rattled. The crackle of broken twigs and the rustle of leaves suddenly seemed amplified in the blackness. Every little noise made us look over our shoulder, our hearts pounding in our chests. But hey, it was all part of the atmosphere we wished to create, right? The night wore on and we got some pretty good footage. Despite the creepy atmosphere, we were all enjoying the creative process. Just when we thought we'd call it a day after shooting one final scene, things took a dark turn. After all, the Pine Barrens is known for its fair share of unexplained phenomena. But to experience something firsthand, that's a whole different ballgame. Something was palpably off. I couldn't see anything strange, but I could feel it in the air. Something was about to happen. I wasn't the only one who felt it. We had already begun packing up, but everyone was moving just a bit faster now. We tried to shrug off the eerie feeling, reminding ourselves that the bare, creaky trees and the low hoots of an unseen owl were just sounds of the forest. Completely normal. Nothing at all to be nervous about. But the night brings shadows with it, and sometimes there are things hiding in the dark corners of the world that are true nightmares. All of a sudden, we heard a sound from the dense underbrush behind us that made us all freeze in our tracks. It was some sort of screech, or perhaps a cry. It's hard to explain because I had never heard anything else like it before or since. I was looking around the woods, searching for the creature that made the noise, when I noticed a dark shape swooping across the moonlit sky above. It was large, larger than any bird native to the Pine Barrens. Along with the creature came a scent like sulfur. It was so powerful that our eyes were watering. As the shape swooped lower, we got a closer look at the beast. It was without a doubt the creature known locally as the Jersey Devil. I still don't know exactly what it was, but this was the thing everyone was talking about. I knew that much. It had what looked like an exterior skeleton, like its bones were on the outside of its body, but they were dark, almost black, and had a reflective sheen that could be seen under the moonlight. Its body resembled that of a deer or a horse. It had cloven hooves and a face with a long snout that wasn't like any type of animal I could compare to. There were two huge black horns coming out of its head and wings erupting from its back. It looked like some type of demon. The creature didn't make any direct moves toward us, but the sight of it, the mere anticipation of a possible attack, was the terror itself. We stood there frozen for what felt like forever, but was probably only a few seconds. I had a hard time wrapping my mind around the creature standing before us. It just didn't make sense. Things like this didn't exist. They were things in movies, not something that lives in the real world. All four of us made the decision to bolt at once. Packing up was a blur. Who cared about the cameras and the boom pole when you were running for your lives? Somehow, despite our panic, we managed a clumsy retreat back to the car. We didn't dare to look back until we were safely inside the vehicle. When we finally dared to look outside, of course it was gone. I'm not sure if it tried to follow us or not. The skies seemed normal, and there were no signs of any disruption in the woods. Did we just... Brian stammered, but none of us could complete his sentence. None of us have been back to the Pine Barrens since that night. The movie? It got completed, but we used the footage we had. We didn't return for any reshoots. Something about the encounter felt personal, and we never uploaded it online or even included it in the cut. But it changed something in us. Back when we had started drafting the script, we had written a line saying, "Reality is scarier than fiction." Little did we know how true that was going to turn out.
I'd like to share an interesting encounter I had recently. I had taken a summer road trip by myself out to Sedona, Arizona. It's a really cool place. I'm from the Midwest originally, so the desert is like an alien world to me. All those shades of reds and browns across the landscape was incredible. The sunsets out there seemed different too, like the sky was bigger or something.
But that's not the real reason I chose Sedona as my road trip destination. I've always been fascinated by ancient cultures. Exploring ancient rock carvings, petroglyphs as the academics call them, has been a hobby of mine for the last few years. There's just something fascinating about it. To know that you are standing in the same place as someone who lived thousands of years ago. Now, Sedona is a bit of a gold mine when it comes to that stuff. There are loads of petroglyphs there, all over the landscape. On the particular evening in question, I'd driven out past the main city, away from the humdrum of civilization, and into the heart of the desert. I found myself exploring a spot I had read about on my way out here. Supposedly, there were some impressively detailed carvings on the rock faces nearby. It was a warm summer evening, a blanket of stars overhead, the kind of scene that makes you feel wonderfully insignificant. Now, after about an hour of searching, I got lucky. An impressive formation of rocks jutting out from the sandy earth caught my attention. Even from a distance, I saw the petroglyphs etched onto it. As I got closer, I realized one drawing in particular was quite peculiar. It was strange to see something like that. From what I could tell, it was a depiction of a Sasquatch-like figure. You know the kind I'm talking about. A tall, bulky figure with arms hanging low, and a massive ape-like head. Now, I've examined loads of petroglyphs before, and I've never come across a drawing like that. It got me wondering just how old the legend of Bigfoot really is. I know that some Native American tribes speak of the creature in their legends, but this is awfully far back into prehistory. It was a curious thought, but not one I dwelled on. I was more interested in the carving in front of me. I was engrossed in my examinations, and I didn't notice anything else around me. I was suddenly broken from my trace by a strange noise in the distance. At first, it was faint, like a low growl, a bit of background wind, maybe the low hum of a distant car, I thought. But then it grew, louder and more distinct. It was not a car and certainly not the wind. This was something else. There was some animal out here with me. I stopped as my eyes were darting around in the dark, desperately trying to figure out the source of the sound. Most of the desert animals are harmless, but there are a few you don't want to cross. It was starting to get dark, and I had this feeling of oncoming dread or fear, I'm not sure. But I knew I wanted to get back to my truck as soon as possible. I quickly packed up my things and made a note of the location of the carving so I could come back the next day and snap some photos of it in better lighting. I should have left the moment I heard that growl, but my interest in the petroglyph kept my attention. And then, out of the corner of my eye, silhouetted against the starlit sky, was a figure standing tall among the clusters of ancient sandstones. At first, I thought it was just part of the landscape, just another of the towering rock formations, but the breeze picked up, and I could see its hair moving in the wind. Its whole body was covered in hair, and when I focused my eyes towards it, I realized that I was looking at the creature that was depicted in the rocks in front of me. Now my mind was scrambling. It was playing tricks, right? This couldn't be happening. But as I focused, my uncertainty became an undeniable reality. The figure easily had to be around 8 to 9 feet tall. It was a ways away, but I could still make an accurate description of it. The creature had this undeniably ape-like face. There was no other animal out here in the desert that I could have mistaken it for, unless a gorilla had escaped from one of the local zoos, but there's just no way. This was taller than any gorilla, and it was at ease on two legs. The outline of it was in the form of a man, so similar that I wondered if maybe the creature was some part of human evolution that simply branched off and chose to live in the wilds. For a moment, it watched me watching it, and then it broke our standoff with a long howl. The noise filled the air and bounced off the canyons, echoing throughout the entirety of the desert. Adrenaline was pumping through my veins, but I was too frozen in shock to do anything except observe. Right after the last echo faded, the figure turned and walked away, disappearing behind another cliff formation. I stood there in the desert, knees shaking and heart pounding. I don't think the experience had quite registered with me then. I walked back to the truck, doing my best to just put one foot in front of the other. Once I was safely inside, only then did the realization slowly ebb in. I had just seen a creature I thought only existed in myths and legends. I wondered if maybe that carving on the rocks was a warning of the creature that lived nearby. Or who knows, maybe the creature did it itself. That's an interesting thought.
I've been firefighting for over a decade. There's lots of highs and lows on the job, but this time, I faced down something I still can't explain. We got a call about a wildfire flaring up on the outskirts of Sacramento. I remember it vividly. It was August, the peak of California's fire season. It's always about moving fast in these situations. So we packed up quick and sped off towards the blaze.
What gets to you in this job isn't just the risk or the fear of uncertainty. It's the knowledge that you're battling with a force you can't always win. Every fire is a challenge. It was getting dark when we arrived at the fire's edge. The glow from the flames lit up the sky, and I could hear the roar of the blaze that sounded like an angered beast. My team and I, eight of us in all, quickly unpacked our gear, set up a perimeter, and got to work. Our goal was to limit the damage if possible, and try and prevent it from spreading to residential areas. For hours, we worked on containment. Strenuous, sweaty work, moving with whatever the fire decided to do. I was tired, I'll admit that, almost near exhausted, but what I'm about to tell you is solid truth. I spotted something odd within the fire, something unsettling. There was this strange shape, a dark, obscure figure nestled stark between the flickering flames. It looked almost human. The odd part was, the fire seemed to steer clear of it, leaving the figure untouched by the flames surrounding it. Its form was too inconstant to identify it, sorta shifting and distorting in the erratic flashes of light and shadows. It stood there and watched us, like it was curious or something. Its body was too dark to see any distinguishable characteristics, but I could see its eyes well enough. They were bright red, even redder than the flames burning around it. The outline of it appeared hazy, like it was covered in some type of fur or similar organic materials. The fact that it didn't catch fire was unfathomable to me. It did not appear to be affected by the heat nor the smoke. Whatever this thing was, it was completely unnatural. A shiver ran down my spine and I could feel an almost oppressive wave of dread wash over me. I quickly alerted the rest of my team, but as their flashlights swept across the place where I'd seen the creature, it seemed to have disappeared. Yet, the unshakable feeling of being observed lingered. We didn't have time to stop and talk about it. We carried on with our duties. It was no time to get swayed by the unknown, as there were homes and lives on the line. But amidst all the chaos and fear, I couldn't shake off that feeling of unease. I'm certain that pair of seemingly glowing eyes are going to haunt me until the day I die. It just seems so unbelievable. We fought the blaze for what seemed like hours more, before we were finally able to contain it. The air turned a misty gray as the last of the smoke began to clear. As we moved about, checking for any potential flare-ups, I found myself glancing towards the direction where I'd observed the strange figure now and then, half expecting it to reappear. It was sometime near dawn, and gratefully, I was exhausted. The fire was contained successfully, and we were finally allowed some respite. As I bedded down, taking a moment's peace before the ash cleanup in the morning, my mind wasn't on the hard-won victory of man over nature, but on the thing in the flames. What was it? What did it want? And how on earth was it immune to fire like that? In the days that followed, I couldn't shake off the eerie feeling the encounter had ignited. I began to question everything. Was the creature I saw responsible for the wildfire? Or was it just watching and waiting like the rest of us? I decided that I had to investigate. Doing some research, I came across the folklore of the Mothman's curse and its ties to catastrophic events. The creature was said to stand 6 feet tall, with large wings folded against its back. And get this, it has red glowing eyes. Those are its only descriptors. Reading these accounts felt eerily familiar. As of today, it's been a year and a half since that day, and I've not faced another creature like that. I've thought about it plenty, though. Turned it over in my head about 100 times. Sometimes I attribute the entire episode to heat, fatigue, and stress. That's a lot easier than believing something like, the Mothman is out there in our world with us. I don't tell this story too often. I've gotten more than a little judgment in the past. I know how outrageous it sounds, but I swear it's the truth. There was a creature out there that day in the middle of the flames. I'm hoping that maybe you or one of your listeners might have answers for me. Did I cross paths with the Mothman that day? And why was the creature in the middle of a raging wildfire? And why was it immune to the fire? I figure if anyone knows, it might be you. It's strange. I almost hope to see the creature again someday. I don't want to relive the fear it brought out of me, but I just want to know that I'm not crazy. That I did in fact see what I saw that day.
It was early spring in Chugach State Park when it happened. One of my favorite times of the year. Now, if you aren't familiar with Chugach, well, it's an Alaskan chunk of wilderness all on its own. Mountains break the skyline, endless forests run thick and dense, hiding all kinds of wildlife within. Not to mention the pristine lakes that mirror the vast expanse of the Alaskan sky. It's harsh, but undeniably beautiful. One of my favorite places in the world to be.
I remember that day well. I've been a park ranger here for about a decade, but nothing in all those silent, solitary patrols ever prepared me for it. See, being a park ranger at Chugach isn't just a job. This park lived in my blood. It was the reason I woke up in the morning. Every day, it was my responsibility to ensure the safety of its visitors and an honor to preserve the pristine nature of the park. My routine activities included patrolling the trails, trying to reduce wildlife encounters with park visitors, and responding to occasional visitor queries. That day, everything was business as usual. However, as the sun started setting, I noticed something odd. It had been a calm evening. The forest was silent except for the distant rustle of leaves in the wind and the occasional call of a bird. I was headed back toward the station after having completed my last patrol of the day. I drove along the dirt road, my truck's headlights cutting through the twilight, when I noticed a figure at the edge of the light darting quickly across the path. It moved too quickly for me to get a good look, but it was unusually large, bigger than a bear but not lumbering like one. It seemed to glide silently across the ground. I continued driving along the trail, my heart pounding, adrenaline spiking as my mind raced. Hours later, back at the station, I was still puzzled over what I had seen. I'm used to the wildlife around here. I've encountered bears, moose, lynx, and even wolves. But whatever this was, it was different. It moved with a swiftness and agility I've never seen before, like it barely disturbed the earth beneath its feet. The logical part of me reasoned that it must have been a known animal, maybe a moose running off. Yet, there was a nagging feeling in me that it wasn't something so mundane. Earlier in the day, I'd received a radio call from a group of anxious hikers, claiming to smell something decaying near a popular trail. This was always a concern in bear country. If there was a carcass nearby, we had to close the trails immediately for the safety of the park visitors. But that wasn't all. They said they could hear eerie laughter carried on the wind, like someone or something was watching them. At the time, I had dismissed it as nerves from city folks not used to the strange noises in the wild. There were no signs of a carcass when I went to investigate, so I moved on. Now, thinking back, I wondered if it could be connected. It wasn't until dusk had completely fallen and the last specks of light had vanished when I heard it. An animal's howl, eerie, echoing through the cold mountain air. Nothing unusual, except there was a human-like quality to it. A bone-chilling mockery, like laughter almost, accompanied the howl. Then, the lights at the station began to flicker. The scent of decay and earthiness wafted through the open window, stronger now. I shut the window and locked it quickly, my heart thudding painfully against my ribs. Something was happening. Something I couldn't explain. I decided it was time to call it a night, slid the bolt across the door, and prepared for bed. But sleep was a long time coming, and I was left alone with the strange, unsettling events of the day. The remainder of the night seemed to last an eternity. Each creak of the building and distant call of wildlife sent my heart racing. It wasn't until the early rays of dawn hit my cabin that I finally managed to drift off to a restless sleep. The following day, I woke with the sunrise and carried on with my duties, but with a heightened sense of alertness. Every odd track, unusual noise, or unexplained scent made me suspect its origin. I was determined to understand what I was dealing with. I needed to ensure the safety of our parkgoers, and selfishly, myself. I didn't want to be out there with some unidentifiable predator, if there was one. Despite my earlier fears, the majority of the day passed uneventfully. That was until late afternoon, when I received a distress call from a family of campers, alleging that they saw an animal with glowing red eyes that was far larger than any known local creature. Heart pounding and a shiver running down my spine, I made my way to the family's campsite. They were visibly shaken and quickly packed up to leave, leaving me to investigate their claims. Where the family had noticed the figure, there was a distinct musky stench, mingling with the scent of decomposition. The smell was overwhelming, and I had to fight back the urge to gag, knowing there was no natural source I could attribute it to around that area. Eventually, dusk fell onto the Alaskan wilderness. I made my way back towards the station, hoping to leave behind the unsettling events of the day. However, my hopes were in vain. About halfway back, a feeling of dread washed over me. The hairs at the back of my neck stood up as bone-chilling whispers seemed to arise from nowhere. I held my breath, waiting, and then I saw it. Standing at the edge of the trees was a figure shifting and coiling upon itself. It was large, and with an eerie agility, the figure took on the shape of a coyote, but one much too large for reality. Its fur was a shadow. Its eyes were red and glowing in the low light. Before I could reach for my radio, it disappeared, leaving me staring at the empty forest trail. That night, I couldn't deny the truth anymore. I was dealing with a creature of Alaskan native lore. It was a shapeshifter, a skinwalker. In the days that followed, I found it hard to carry out my duties. Now, I didn't only need to worry about the park's conservation, but also about an unknowable entity that seemed to lurk in its heart. I grappled with ideas of alerting authorities or park visitors, but how could I expect to be believed? And if I were, what actions could be taken? After a week of restless nights, unusual sights, and eerie sounds, everything stopped, as if the creature, the skinwalker, had vanished. Things got back to normal, or rather as normal as they could get. Maybe it was just passing through. That's the only explanation that gave me any solace. It's been years since those bizarre days in Chugach State Park. I continue to serve here. My respect for the power and mystery of this land has only deepened. I'm not a man of superstitions, but I can't deny or rationalize what I experienced during that springtime in Alaska. Some things we just can't explain, and maybe we aren't meant to.
I guess I felt always most at home while floating down on a river, like being surrounded by the subtle sounds of nature, the rhythmic lapping of the water at my canoe, the hum of the cicadas. And while I'm not normally one for sharing these types of stories, this particular experience was too strange to keep to myself. It happened on one of these trips, a lazy Saturday in Providence, Rhode Island.
I usually go canoeing in the heart of summer, when everything's vibrant and lively. I find it an ideal way to soothe my mind from the buzz of city life. That day started like any other. The sky was a clear blue with scattered puffy clouds. I'd been out on the water since early morning, stopping now and then to catch my breath, have a light snack, or just recline and admire the view. I had paddled quite a distance away from Providence downtown and reached the peaceful and secluded spots where the river wound through the heart of the forest. There was a sort of comforting greenness in those moments, looking at all the shades from mint to pine. As I silently glided across the river, I looked closer at the things around me. Funny how, within these quiet moments, you notice the smallest details that you never did before, like the ripples in the water as a fish swam by, or the minutiae of a dragonfly's wings as it hovered over lily pads. I slid my paddle through the water, steering my way closer to the edge where the maples leaned over the water. I reveled in this moment of serene solitude, oblivious to the strange unfolding that was soon to befall. I was about to head back when an odd clicking sound shattered the stillness. It was definitely out of place, not at all like the typical chorus of nature sounds I was used to. Intrigued and bemused, I decided to paddle further upstream to investigate. Slowly moving towards the sound, my eyes were scanning the tree line, searching for what could be producing the strange click-clack. It felt a bit mechanical yet animalistic at the same time, a strangeness in the serene wilderness. I started feeling something unnatural, a growing sense of uncomfortable prickling at the back of my neck, a feeling of being watched. I've been out in the woods a good bit of my life, but I've never felt like this before, being observed by something unseen yet palpable. It sent the hairs on my neck shooting up, and an unexplained chill ran down my spine, despite the summer heat. But in spite of the discomfort, my curiosity had taken hold of me, and I ventured further in, drawn towards the peculiar sounds. Little did I know, I was about to encounter something beyond my wildest imagination. Just as I was considering turning back, the normally lively sounds of the forest fell ominously silent. The vibrant chattering of the birds, even the slightest whispering rustle of the leaves, seemed to have been sucked out of the air. Yeah, I noticed the water around me changing too. Familiar ripples from passing fish and bugs were replaced with unusual, substantial splashes, like something quite big disturbing the surface. I paused, feeling every nerve in my body jangling like alarm bells. And that's when I saw it. Something unholy crawling on the riverbank just about 20 feet away from me. The clicking sound and the stirring water both were making sense now. It startled me to the core. This creature, it looked almost human but was distorted in a way that things of nightmares are. The way it moved, damn, it was terrifyingly abnormal. Crawling on its hands and feet, it was lightning fast with a surprising grace for something that ungodly. It was also quite tall for something that you'd normally see out here. It was maybe 5 or even 6 feet, just scrunched down like a contortionist in a box. Its body was entirely naked, as if void of any characteristics and absolutely pale. The head was the most off-putting part. Its face was, if you can term that a face, hollow, except for 2 humongous black eyes. It seemed to consume all the light around, like a void. There was an open and gaping mouth and no traces of a nose, but it was a living creature, and it was indeed making that clicking sound, producing a ghastly echo reverberating through the silence around. It was terrifying but also captivating in a way, like seeing a horrific car crash. You want to turn away, but you can't. I felt my heart thud against my ribs, every muscle frozen as if I was turned to stone. Just as abruptly it had appeared, the creature turned around and melted back into the forest, leaving in its wake a severely rattled me. I tried to regain control over my thoughts and body, every nerve of mine pulsing with adrenaline. Hastily, I turned my canoe around and paddled off in the other direction towards safety as quickly as possible, leaving behind the eerily quiet spot. Ever since that encounter, I can't help but question what happened that day. It feels like a dream, a really horrible one. But I have this irreparable sense of knowing that what I saw was real. It was there. It wasn't my imagination. And flares of fear still grip my heart when I try to picture that skeletal figure in my mind. Until this day, I have no solid explanation for what it could be. I've heard stories about mysterious creatures in the woods before. But until you see something like this with your own eyes, you don't truly believe it. That day, something changed in me. I saw something. Something surreal, and it left a profound and long-lasting impact on me. It forever altered how I view the quiet wilderness of Rhode Island.